Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we tell you about reports of the big Apple phone slowdown.
Plus, what you need to know about a Google program with childlike feelings.
Also on the show, why it's time to say goodbye forever to a favorite internet brand.
And we dive into an app that will help you get a better night's sleep this summer.
Fingers crossed, I hope so. That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
It was a big week. It's always a big week. It's nice and sunny outside. We're all in Toronto. Amber Mack, you love it when I ask these questions. What was the best thing about your week since last we spoke?
Well, probably the best thing is that our son is just wrapping up grade 7 and he had a really great end of the year. They did a field trip to Wonderland. He had lots of great moments during the week. And I think it's fair to say as a parent that when your kid is happy, everything else just runs smoothly.
This is a monumentous occasion. So how are you and your husband Chris feeling? Because this is the end of grade 7. He's going into grade 8. He's a big boy.
We're good. You know, it's been such a rough couple of years for kids, especially for tweens. And we're just happy that he was able to end the school year in person with his friends and that, fingers crossed, grade 8 is more of a normal experience. Because if you think about it, for all of these kids who have been in school during the pandemic, they really went not only with disruptions here in Ontario in grade 7, but also many in grade 6. And if I'm thinking correctly, also in grade 5. So you've had really three school years that have been interrupted by lockdowns and online learning. So it's great to know that we are sort of slowly coming out of this.
You want to definitely come out of this, but what you don't want is for them to grow up fast. So you want that to slow down. But the school and the education obviously is important. And we're going to see the effects, unfortunately. Sorry to start the show on a bit of a damper, but you know, a couple of years of all of those people learning at all levels, kids, university students, everyone, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out because a lot of people had difficulty learning remotely at all ages. Well, we were talking about slowdowns. This one also is impacting a lot of people globally. So what are people talking about? Their favorite fruit?
Yes. So according to BBC News over this past week, millions of iPhone users could get payouts in legal action against Apple. So based on this article, essentially, there was a legal claim accusing Apple of secretly slowing the performance of older phones. Now, overall, this lawsuit is seeking damages for about 25 million UK iPhone users. Now, Apple denies ever actually slowing down the phones. But at the end of the day, we know that with many tech companies and tech products, you know, historically, they often don't support previous iterations of their software, and they slowly encourage you to always buy new. Now, you know, it's interesting to see what is happening here. Many people, Michael, are calling it battery gate. And, you know, it's, you know, potentially a win for iPhone users.
Yeah, it certainly is. And obviously, this does happen, as you mentioned, with lots of different products across the board. As you said, when, you know, products get iterated on and new ones come out, they don't eventually support older products. What I do find interesting, and particularly in this, which I thought, and I could be wrong, so people can tweet at us and tell me if I'm wrong, but Apple usually seems to tell their users what's going on. And I think that's the other piece of the puzzle here, that apparently in the software updates that happen, there wasn't anywhere that the company actually made clear that it would be slowing down the devices. And so I thought that was interesting because usually Apple does tend to say, hey, this is what's happening. Do you agree? What, you don't really get a choice. You have to press yes. But like they usually are pretty good at telling people what's going on, both negatively and positively when it comes to the devices, unless I'm wrong. Other companies, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a good history of, especially as of late, of transparency. And I think it's also fair to say that, although this isn't connected to this issue, but on the privacy front, they have certainly made some big leaps forward. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think this is a perfect example of how the big tech companies have to be accountable to their users, especially when we're talking about these numbers. And speaking about that accountability,
I was about to laugh and say, speaking of accountability and tech giants.
Yeah, this is an interesting story from Google. So I think everybody's been talking about this for the past week. I certainly included it in my newsletter and know it's a big topic. So basically, a Google engineer, according to The Guardian, says that an AI bot wants to serve humanity. And basically, the engineer has said, the engineer has been let go, just to be clear, or on leave. The engineer said that this bot, which is a computer program that is built on artificial intelligence, was starting to act human-like. In fact, the engineer said the bot was acting as though it was maybe a 7 or 8 year old child.
Well, and this is the thing. So this whole discussion around achieving a level of consciousness with regards to artificial intelligence. So of course, a lot of experts all over the world up in arms and said, it's not possible. That's not true. It didn't happen. And then there's a lot of this happened, that didn't happen internally in the company. It's not true. It's an interesting discussion. We've been talking about it for years. You know, when is the likelihood that artificial intelligence will reach that level or ability similar to humans and think and feel like humans do? And at the end of the day, no one seems to also answer whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I've noticed if you read all of the articles and actually the implications, which I also find fascinating. And it does seem like this kind of technology is just running away from us like every other technology without any real strong frameworks behind it. You know, if you believe in sci-fi and movies and everything else we watch, it seems like it's inevitable we're going to get there eventually at some stage, maybe not in our lifetime.
I mean, I think the one thing that you want to remember, and I also talked about this story on a radio interview earlier this week, and I was just saying that, you know, it's not as though this bot has created itself to do these things, right? Like, we always have to remember
somebody made it.
Yes, humans are at the core of actually the programming. And even though, because of artificial intelligence and machine learning, I mean, it has it in the name, they learn over time. Basically, the bot is doing exactly what it was programmed to do. So none of this, when I first saw it, was really a surprise. It's like saying when I spoke to my Google speaker, it spoke back. Well, guess what? It's programmed to do that. So let's not,
And people did it. So people are responsible for it. So people can change it.
Yeah, you can have a conversation about what are the ethical implications long-term if we talk about things like AI warfare and if bots are learning to do things like kill in battle, those type of things.
Unplug them.
Well, this is the thing. So those are bigger, heartier conversations I think we can have.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, just quickly, I know you included the story, which is a good one. Wow, an end of an era when it comes to a very popular internet browser.
Honestly, I would lose my mind if this happened to hotmail.com, because you know I hold on to that email account because I think it's retro. Well, so what's happened is, if everybody remembers Internet Explorer, that browser, if you used it in the past, it's going to be no more. So it's going to be winding down and not supported anymore by Microsoft.
Yeah, so it was a 27-year run, believe it or not. And I think many people obviously used Internet Explorer way back in the day. But of course, there have been new options available on the marketplace, including, of course, like Google Chrome and Mozilla Firefox. And there are many other examples. So RIP, all good software comes to an end. And this is no exception.
Alrighty, when we return, how a new company is teaching plants to communicate with humans.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, the tech conference Collision gets underway in Toronto in Canada this coming week, and one farm tech company, Innerplant, is teaching plants to communicate with humans to help improve crop yields. Now, they're going to be at Collision, and the Innerplant's CEO and co-founder is joining us now, Shelley Aronoff. Thanks so much for being on the show. This is quite remarkable. Let's start at the beginning of how farmers currently farm and produce food, and what are some of those difficulties that they face? And obviously those difficulties, I assume, is exactly what you guys are trying to tackle and solve.
So when we talk about farming, we talk about very large scale farming, which most farming is, but we think about crops like soybean and corn that could easily be thousands, if not tens of thousands of acres. And we've been using, interestingly enough, as much as we've evolved in our farming system, we've been using basically the same tools for the last half a decade, if not longer. So farmers don't have the right way to find problems at the right time, what is impacting the plant. And what they end up doing instead is applying chemicals everywhere in advance with the hope of catching problems. But the data, if you look at the data at a high level, it's really fascinating. So farmers are using more pesticides every year and more fertilizers, and they're still getting the same results, same yields, and they lose about 20% of potential crop yield to pathogens. So the data really clearly shows that about 50 to 75% of pesticides are misapplied and 30 to 50% of fertilizers are overapplied. All of this ending up polluting our food and water supplies. Sorry, I have a child here. So the concept behind Innerplant is to stop these practices. We can enable crops to communicate their needs. And by that, we don't have to guess and try to be ahead of problems. We can just provide plants what they need, where and when they need it.
I was reading over on agfundernews.com that the technology that you've developed has essentially recoded a plant's DNA so that if the plant is struggling and the plant is sick, there'll be an immediate way to tell what potentially is going on or that there are issues. Can you talk about how you actually do that and recode a plant's DNA?
Absolutely. So plants have an immune system reaction that's activated by stress. And the beauty about plants is that they've evolved for a very long time to protect themselves because they're immobile. And those reactions have evolved with the plants for, you know, thousands of years. So when the plant is attacked, it will start reacting to protect itself. For example, if a plant is bitten by insects, it will start to produce a new compound in its leaves to make it taste bad. And the plants have various reactions because they react differently depending on what it is that's attacking them. So drought, nitrogen deficiency, fungal pressure, insect pressure, they're all going to be different. What we do is we change the code of the crop. We teach the crop as it's reacting to the stress that's attacking it to start producing a new protein. And that's basically the holy grail of this. The plant will start producing a new protein when it's reacting to a stress that's attacking it. And that protein creates an optical signal that we can see. So we can't see it by eye, but it basically creates a new light. And that light is something that we can collect with affordable equipment from anywhere from a tractor to satellite imagery, which was key for us because we wanted that coverage, that affordable, scalable coverage.
So speaking of that affordable, scalable coverage and the actual equipment itself, what is it like for a farmer to implement your solution and what kind of training is involved to help seamlessly integrate this type of technology into their current process?
Yeah, I like the word seamlessly. Our goal is actually at Innerplant, it's not to create new data, it's to create a new farming system. And what I mean is we've spent a lot of time with farmers. We actually have a farmer community that advises us on what technology to build. And no one necessarily needs more data, even if it's the right data. What they need is a way to farm with less risk, higher productivity, and easier overall, because farming is really hard and it's all about risk mitigation and really doing everything in hard conditions. So the way we're developing the system is so it is seamless and ubiquitous in a sense. We are embedding the technology in the seeds. When farmers plant seeds, they'll be harvesting data. They don't have to do anything different. They don't have to change their operations or any additional work. And then we work with various large partners like tractor manufacturers or companies that supply products to farmers, satellite companies, so that the data is collected by us and then embedded into the systems and the data platforms that the farmers already use. So in a sense, they're going to be doing everything the same, but they're going to get better recommendations. They're going to have better information that they can access through the same systems, and those systems will operate more efficiently for the farmers.
So when we talk about technology like this, and we look at the cost to roll this out to farmers all across the US, farmers who are interested around the world, what does this actually do to the farmer's bottom line?
We try to avoid any change to the farmer's bottom line in that way to create less frequency, less friction with the farmers. What we found is that we should have ways to monetize and create new technology without increasing the cost to farmers, but instead of it just creating more efficiency. For us, it's through the seed. By targeting something that the farmers already buy and the technology they already pay for, which is seed technology, we can just create a new iteration of the seed technology, a new tech stack, if you will, and then charge them the same as they did before. So our concept is, let's provide you better technology at the same price point. And the reason we can do that is because just dynamics of the industry. It's today 100 times cheaper to make technology like ours than it was 20 years ago. A lot of the patents are expiring. A lot of the old technologies are becoming generics. So we have an opportunity to take advantage of essentially the maturation of the market to just provide a better technology at the same price point and not charge farmers more.
Well, listen, Shelley, we wanted to thank you for joining us again. The name of the company is called Innerplant, and thank you so much for being on the feed.
Thank you.
Up next, we share an app to help you stay focused and on time.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now we're going to take a look at some new and trending apps. And I will say this one is pretty useful, especially in summertime when all of a sudden the sun is rising before 6 a.m. Maybe you're out later because there's more light in the day. So you'll be excited to learn about an app called Sleep Reset. It's a personalized sleep app. So it's designed by top sleep experts to help you get more Z's. In fact, it says that the average user will actually see about an 88-minute increase in total sleep time. Michael, that's phenomenal.
Well, so I'm trying to use this because obviously, as you know, and I've shared on the show before, I suffer quite badly from not being able to sleep at all. I actually cannot sleep without heavy medication. So I need assistance. And so this app seems to have a lot of clinical research. And it also touts itself that it's going to help you improve your sleep with no pills or supplements necessary. So this is why I liked this and I thought I would give it a go. I will check back and let you guys know, but I'm sure lots of people listening have trouble sleeping and it ruins their entire day. They walk around like zombies. I've tried everything from natural remedies. I've been to sleep clinics and been hooked up to everything and all kinds of stuff. And you know, one of the things is doctors say is to help try and retrain your brain, like as if you're a kid to sleep. And so it's got a lot of science in this that helps step you through it. And it tries to help you log all of the different factors when you wake up, when you go to sleep, the environment, all kinds of stuff to help you understand, exactly, you know, where the trouble might be and then how to rectify it.
Absolutely. And we should say that this is probably pricier than you've seen for your average sleep app. And I just want to say one thing to people who are listening right now. Many of these health apps that we're seeing launch, like you said, Michael, have tons of science behind them, lots of research, major development. So this is really like having your own digital sleep therapist and a program that is customized just for you. And that's why you're seeing that, it can be even $75 a month to use this because they recognize recognize again how important it is, and there's a lot behind it. So we've come a long way from the apps of 10 years ago. And I think what we're seeing is that in the health space, they're incredibly sophisticated. And this is just one great example of that.
Yeah, and I will say just with this one that there's actually lots of little lessons you can learn about the science that they're actually using behind the methods that they're encouraging you to use to help improve your sleep. And you actually have access to coaches via text and video calls and actual clinicians and people that can genuinely help and understand. So again, for that price point, you're getting access to, you know, experts at your fingertips and understanding, again, not just some of the things you should be doing, but also the science behind those things that they're suggesting.
Absolutely. All right. So next up, this is a great app to stay focused. In fact, it has a name that you probably won't forget. It's called Be Focused, Focus Timer. And I know it's available on iOS devices, and it helps you better manage tasks. So Michael, this is a really interesting app that's been used by millions of people, but I like this idea that there's so many distractions digitally. So this allows you to kind of focus on one thing and have that timer that goes alongside with that particular task.
Yeah, and I think you've talked about this before when you're giving advice to people as well. It's breaking things up and giving short breaks. And so that way, then you've also achieved certain things throughout the day. And so this is kind of formalizing that kind of scenario or suggestion that you've made before on the show. And what this app does is it's breaking up individual tasks among discrete intervals. And then all of those different individual tasks that you've broken up and worked out when and when you're going to deal with them or going to do them, they've then put in separate short breaks in between those as well. So it's almost, I guess, it feels like when you do your, you know, you write your lists, if you're a mad list maker, and you get that satisfaction of crossing it off. Well, in this, it's also gone that one step further, that it's also made sure that you have a little reward almost, like, and you get that break, because obviously everybody knows some tasks are a little bit harder than others, and breaks do help get you that wind back again to then go again. So it has all kinds, depending on what tasks you're after, and it can do short breaks, long breaks. You can target a certain amount of intervals per day. So pretty much anything and everything you can think about, and actually shoots you out a reward, a report to show if you're on track or not, if you need to actually modify the way that you're approaching your tasks.
Very cool. All right. So we just have just over a minute left. So the last app we want to talk about was featured on Global News. And this is an app that was developed by a company in London, Ontario. So it's an app that will help people who have suffered from traumatic brain injuries. So the idea is that essentially this is a tool that will help you organize brain activity in patients who have suffered some sort of damage. Again, they mentioned specifically it's for people who have mild traumatic brain injury. And another note that I saw in this blog post is that June is International Brain Injury Awareness Month. So a great month just to raise more awareness about an app like this that does exist.
Yeah. And what's neat is obviously simple tasks we can take for granted, those people that have suffered brain injuries, it works out the value, those personalized values to those tasks, such as driving, grocery shopping, exercise. So you can plan and pace your daily activity while you're recovering, because we take that for granted. Simple tasks like that can actually overload your brain if you're suffering from an injury. And so you really have to be careful helping with your body's recovery at the same time you obviously are active and doing tasks. So it really has put that into practice, like how much effort and exertion is going to happen, tracking that, suggesting when and how your brain and your body is reacting to that, and when you should do it and when you should take it easy. So I just thought that one was a really neat one to mention as well. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there at different levels have suffered from brain injury. So three apps again. We've got Sleep Reset. We've got the Be Focused app. And then, of course, the last one, My Brain Pacer. And of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, of course, tweet us at AmberMac and at MBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag The Feed. Coming up, how a chatbot is helping patients in need.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Irish-founded Wobot has developed an artificial intelligence-powered chatbot that is capable of creating a therapeutic bond with users to help with mental health issues. Now, Alison Darcy is the founder and president of Wobot Health and is joining us now. Alison, before we get into the nitty-gritty and the seriousness of what you guys are helping to solve with people, I have to start with the cleverest name I've heard in a long time. Wobot, how the devil did you come up with that?
Oh, you know, I just love a good pun. I mean, who doesn't, right? But at the start, I was, it is slightly against the grain where a lot of people who are building things in the sort of wellness industry kind of go for happy names. So I actually consulted with a few people from like grassroots organizations representing those with anxiety and depression. And actually, they loved the name. They kept saying like, we're so grateful that you're not trying to tell us how to be like a better version of ourselves, that like it's a bit tongue in cheek and it's a bit funny and it's just a bit memorable, but it's also a really good description about what it is.
I have to tell you that for probably a year and a half now, I have been speaking during my virtual keynotes about wellness technology, and every time I include Wobot. So the response has been just phenomenal, and I'm very familiar with some of the research that you have done at Stanford University. So I would love you to talk further about the success that you've seen in terms of people who have decided to use Wobot on a daily basis.
Oh, thanks, Amber. Yes, I mean, I think what I set out to build was really a tool, right? Like a true tool that you could use integrated into your everyday life, and something that kind of removed a lot of the barriers and things that prevent us from just getting good quality care in the actual moments where you need to be practicing good techniques that we tend to learn through approaches like cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm really obsessed with CBT. I think it is such an amazing approach to mental health. And it's of course, it's the most evidence-based approach we have and most widely studied approach. But what's great about it is that it's so focused on how you're thinking now and the things that you do that kind of just come together to sort of undermine you. And the problem with delivering that approach traditional setting is it's not a problem, I suppose, but what we know really helps people do well with that kind of approach is if they practice the skills in between those sessions. And here the thing was, there was just no easy way, there were no tools that allowed people to really do that well. And I also think when you learn CBT as a therapist, and you know, most psychologists would say the same, you know, you're sort of blown away by just the practicality of having a tool set that allows you to talk back to some of the kind of negative thoughts that you might have, like, you know, what we sometimes refer to as the inner critic, you know, the thing that tells you you're a complete loser, you're never going to be able to do anything, everyone dislikes you, which honestly is, they're just thoughts I have if I run out of toilet paper. And like, that is not a joke. I don't mean to diminish
it. It spirals from there. Yeah.
Yes. And like, I think what's great about CBT is that it's just such a great tool that can be used, that's really helpful for everyone, because those kinds of distorted thoughts, it's just part of being human. So this wasn't about replacing anything in the clinic. It was about augmenting something that we had in the clinic and delivering something based on those tools in a way that just people really can really meaningfully use and interact with in that moment where they're having that kind of a thought process. So what I think, because it's a tool, just like any tool, it gets applied really broadly in different contexts and in different ways by people. And it's always lovely to hear from some of our users just the impact that Wobot's had in their life, like whether it's that they're coming through a dark period and they just need this kind of go-to thing that helps them stop that spiral, or you know, they were in treatment before and they just needed a refresher, or they've not been able to share things with someone else, and Wobot sort of almost provides a practice for them to get things off their chest. And then they're saying, oh, this is what therapy might look like. Oh, that's much less intimidating than I thought it was going to be. And then they can sort of, you know, think about whether they want to bring things further themselves or not. So I would say the impact has been broad. you know, we continue to do the studies, to do the work, to ensure that what we're creating is you know, effective and safe. And it's been an interesting ride.
I think that's key there, that you mentioned those distorted thoughts and those simple spirals that everyday people go through. So this isn't just for the people we hear about that have severe mental health issues. This is a tool, as you've mentioned, for anybody, anywhere. And those people especially that may not, you know, think that they need to speak to somebody or go to a therapist, or they're a bit apprehensive. So can you walk us through that first sense or impression, if somebody was to think, you know what, I'm having a little bit of a bad day, it's happening quite a bit, I need some kind of tool, I'm a little freaked out. If they went on to Wobot, what would the experience be like? Because obviously, again, that adds that second layer. Maybe someone's a bit of a technophobe, or they're a little bit worried to talk to a person. Sure. But then they're also like, is this also a safe environment? Because it's an AI-powered chatbot. I don't even know what that is.
Right.
So walk us through that.
Right. I mean, I think like, how to describe Wobot? Yeah, AI is an intimidating phrase, isn't it? And it's been so overhyped. And but this is like an AI created by your grandmother. Like, honestly, I'm not very good with technology, but you know, one of the things that I mean, the key thing I think that Wobot has to do, and we seek to do in every encounter, and particularly at the start, is create a trust with people. So Wobot tends to be just very sort of concretely describe, look, this is what I do. This is what we'll do with your data. This is where, you know, this is how confidential it is. And we really seek to make sure that we have a very, very clarified, clear, plain English, informed consent process. And that consent can actually be, you know, withdrawn at any point, even just by saying to Wobot, hey, Wobot, like, I'm not comfortable with this anymore. I need you to delete all my data. But, you know,
that's probably the easiest breakup I've ever heard.
I know. Right? I know. Right. Well, and I think when you read some of our reviews, people are like, gosh, it's really not a technology that's trying to get you to engage with it. Like, Wobot will back off completely, because what we believe in is what we call in medical circles, it's known as self-determination. In other words, if people don't feel like they're in control and in charge of their medical decisions, it leads to worse outcomes from a medical point of view. So it's really important that people feel like they're in the driver's seat. Because if you're, you know, if you're coercing or trying to persuade or anything like that, sure, you've lost the battle. You know yourself, if somebody's trying to convince you of something, it kind of makes you want to just resist. So what Wobot does really well is engage people in their own thought process. And that's what it's really about. It's Wobot asking the correct questions, but you're doing all the work. And I think when you start talking to Wobot, that piece is really clear. And it's one of the best kind of nuanced advantages that you get with this type of technology. Yes, you're getting the benefit of, you know, being heard, being listened to, and being empathized with, and being directed to good tools. But it's implicitly understood you are the person that's going to be doing this work. So it's still you, and you're building your confidence and learning how to be able to sort of challenge those thoughts when they come up in the right moment. But as for the experience, so that's what you'll find when you talk to Wobot first, is that Wobot will sort of describe again the parameters of what they do and what they don't do. And then just sort of say, what I like to say is, I think each experience is anchored in just this question, like, how are you? And it's amazing how we have sort of as a culture stopped asking ourselves that question, you know. And so it gives this moment of like, huh, how am I actually? Like, this moment of self-reflection. And depending on your answer, you know, that's what the experience will then depend on how you're doing, right? So I think, I think we've come to understand, instead of it being that question being a very descriptive, articulate description of my mood state, it's really like, am I okay? Like, are you okay right now? You know, are you feeling dysregulated? Are you like a bit of a place? One of the things that we notice when people are upset is that it's actually hard to know how you are, like, in any great detail. You know if you're just freaking out or you're not, sort of thing, right? So we want to be able to do that. So if somebody is feeling like, no, I'm not okay, I don't feel good right now, and I don't know what's wrong, then Wobot's really sort of gently talking someone through well, what it could be, and then with the aim to inviting them to engage in an evidence-based technique that helps them see how to kind of feel better in that very moment.
Could you just tell us quickly, for people who do want to try Wobok, because I think people are going to listen to this and be interested, what can they do? Where should they go?
Currently, there's an app that's free in the app stores, and search for Wobok, W-O-E-B-O-T. And yeah, that's right. That's it. Give us feedback if you like.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on the feed, and keep up the great work at Wobok.
Thank you very much.
Up next, why we need more women in tech and how one company is leaning in.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Seamus Welland is the Chief Information Officer at Manulife, and he joins us now to talk about encouraging more women in technology at Manulife and beyond. Seamus, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Amber.
I should say that I was recently part of an incredible panel that I wish everybody could have heard, where we were talking about women in technology at Manulife. And I wanted to really start there. Why is this important for Manulife? And what did you learn after that session?
Yeah, so I want to start by thanking you, Amber, for hosting what was the flagship event of our Women in Technology Week, where we had you along with three global leaders, and you shared experiences and recommendations and answered questions, and it had such a big impact. And we got rave reviews from that event. But beyond that, Women in Technology Week, we really encourage women, regardless of roles, so inside, outside of technology roles, to challenge themselves and learning a new skill, making new connections and new networks, and really having fun. And so we had events for the week, and they featured hands-on training and application development or data visualization, how to leverage data and artificial intelligence, as well as speaker series like the one you hosted. Sponsoring women in technology is a personal passion of mine. And as a father of two daughters, it's important for me to take an active role in allyship. And I have to break the biases that unfortunately still exist. And I want to help drive the change that I want to see in the world.
So speaking of that change, why is it important to try and get more women at the seat of the table when it comes to creating products and technology products? And how would that translate into improving products, especially say at Manulife?
Well, including a diverse perspective in our product design and our thinking, it really reflects and represents the customers and the communities that we serve. And so if we have unilateral thinking, I don't think we get the best results. I know we don't. And when we have a diverse and inclusive culture that really gathers insights, thoughts, and experiences and puts those into our products and the way we serve our customers, we're just so much better.
One of the things that we did have a chance to talk about on the panel was the effects of the hybrid workplace, how remote work could potentially be advantageous for more diversity and inclusion. What are some of your thoughts on that?
It's a great question. It's one I've thought a lot about along with our team. And at Manulife, we have a real focus on employee experience. And the bar we set is to deliver consumer-grade technology to our colleagues. And that's what everyone expects, because we're consuming so much technology in our lives. That's where the bar gets set. Our best experiences in our personal life are what we expect at the office. And we want, for our collaborative experiences, seamless connectivity. That allows for inclusive collaboration and enables flexibility in a hybrid working mode. No one needs the added anxiety of, will the technology work when it's needed? And it really needs to help enable us, not be an anxiety moment for all of us. beyond just the collaborative experiences that have been traditionally held in conference rooms, we offer one-click room reservations, and they have visual floor plan guidance. And that's been so critical for our employees, especially those who joined us during the past 2 years. And then finally, we have these tech lounges, and they're at all of our sites. And we are able to serve our colleagues with peripheral needs like a docking station or a headset. And we also allow Ask Me Anything needs on how to use their equipment so that when we return, we have this seamless connected experience.
And so now that everybody is getting back to what they considered normal and being in person, whether it's at work, and obviously our kids are returning to schools, what I love that I've heard and read is Manulife is actually helping with tools they may need in regards to refurbished laptops, because obviously everybody listening knows how expensive technology can be, but also how important technology can be in the development of our kids and their education. So can you share with us what Manulife is doing and how this is helping our kids get back to school and connected?
Yeah, and I'm happy to say that Manulife is a proud signatory of the CEO pledge that to bridge the digital divide. And I want to describe what that is. The pledge, it's a movement by Canadian CEOs, and we donate used computers and devices to disadvantaged Canadians. And that's so important for digital access and literacy. They're basic requirements in the new economy, and we really need to contribute to disadvantaged Canadians and ensure that they have the tools and the skills needed to thrive in working in the digital age. And so again, Manulife is a signer of the pledge, and we support helping disadvantaged Canadians get access to not only the devices, but also skills.
Very cool. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks again for having me as part of that panel. And we will keep in touch in terms of what's happening with women in technology. And thanks for being on the feed.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Up next, the best tech for the geekiest dads, and we decide if they're rad or fad.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now, and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Wish List.
All right, it's time for Wish List on the show. And this is the season of Father's Day. And whether you're looking for a gift for dad for Father's Day or really any time of the year, we're going to go through a list of really geeky things. But first up, I wanted to mention that when it comes to rad gifts, I'm going to be talking about some summer tech next week. But just to give you guys the heads up, an exclusive on a great deal from iRobot. They have a phenomenal sale across Canada, and you can check it out on their website at iRobot.ca. And these deals last until June 23rd. So for example, on the iRobot Roomba J7 Plus, you can get $200 off a $999 robot vacuum, which is incredible. Again, I'll dive into the details. What you need to know is it gets smarter over time. You can use voice assistant, and this one's especially for Michael. It is the only robot vacuum with a poop promise, so it can avoid solid pet waste. I thought you'd like that, Michael.
This is amazing. And anyone who has a pet is going to this, they're going to hear this. It's going to be music to their ears. And I gripe anytime at Amber's house, and then we go for a walk with the dog, and I'm obsessed with pet poop, especially her dog is bigger than me, and her dog poops bigger than me. And I just get concerned from a practicality perspective. So if you have little dogs in your house, cats, whatever it is, I just love that iRobot seems to be really on it and understand not just cleaning your house, but who's in your house. That's yes. What I love.
Yes, any accidents, iRobot vacuum will avoid any solid waste. So we'll talk about it more next week. But again, you can check out these deals until June 23rd at iRobot.ca. So Michael and Aaron, I've sent you this list. And as always, I sent it last minute. So I hope you've had a chance to.
I have at least 7 or 8 that I think are fat, that are rad. And I want you to buy them for me, even though I'm not a dad. So that is that.
First of all, the site is called Dodo Bird, and bird is B-U-R-D. So I thought that was fun. And it has 39 good gifts for the geekiest dads. Aaron, I know Michael's waiting to go, but is there anything on here you think is rad or just like a groaner, like really a big fad that you wouldn't want?
There are a bunch of cool things on this list. I like the brain specimen coasters, glass coasters that have like a sliver of like an image of a medical image of a brain in them. And then when you stack them up, it kind of creates a 3D brain. It's kind of eerie, but also very cool in a conversation
piece.
So what
you want to see is after you've taken a drink, someone's brain as you put it down. Just think about that. And then you're going to reach for an hors d'oeuvre or something if you're entertaining.
I love it. Again, it's a conversation piece. Coasters can be so forgettable and so unremarkable. And this is kind of very different, very
Imagine
remarkable.
Imagine if it could be your brain. Like if you took pictures of your brain and then could customize it, and then it's actually a picture of your brain. Like, well, that's my brain. And that's how sexy it is.
I think that the good news is, Michael, you don't even have to do that because no one would really know the difference.
That's fair. I would know.
But again, that goes back to the size of the brain and just no comment on that front.
But also then a doctor could be at your dinner party and be like, I see a problem. You know what I mean?
I think Aaron is right on this. Like honestly, just to visualize it, like Aaron says, you stack them up and basically they're clear and they're not disgusting looking or anything, just for anyone who thinks they are. When you stack them up, it makes a complete brain. So a very cool 3D kind of model. And I think Aaron, to your point, kind of great for, you know, kids who are interested in science as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Okay, Michael, science, I know you're waiting.
Moon, I love the globe. And there's no batteries involved. And so basically it's an accurate, an alternative, technology that basically gently rotates the moon, eliminating the use for batteries or cables. And it would, and so basically it's the moon that sits on a little, I guess, wooden, thing, like a little table, and then the moon rotates. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it's called a Moon Mova Globe, just to be clear. And it's a centerpiece for a dining table or a workspace. But yeah, that is actually super rad. You know, it's funny, I was kind of saying rad or fad, but I think you guys are right.
Just so you know, that dates all three of us. Rad or fad. That seems like an 80s thing.
Yeah, it's probably true. But I will say there's such cool stuff. Aaron, anything else that kind of caught your eye on this list?
Yeah, I do love the chemist's spice rack. To try to describe it, it's it looks like it's a series of test tubes and flasks and chemistry type, you know, equipment, and they're all made of glass, but they're for your spices, and they arrange in their own rack. And then one is for, you know, olive oil and salt and pepper and things like that.
People that cook. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to get technical, if you want to get nerdy, cooking is chemistry, but even if you don't, I think it looks cool. And it's a cool, again, a conversation piece for your kitchen. Makes you feel like a mad scientist when you're creating dinner.
Mad scientist. Amber, is there anything on here that stands out to you that you would buy either for your husband or for your son to give to your husband or even your dad?
Well, I did want to say that just to go back to Aaron's spice rack, the chemist spike rack, I think these are US prices. So the price is about $44. It's actually not bad for that full spice rack that you get. And Aaron's bang on. It's super, super cool. So out of this list, there are so many things that I love. You know, I have to say, you see these lists all the time on the internet, right? And most of the time,
and they're usually silly. Most of them aren't.
They're
great.
Silly, right? But actually, there's really fun stuff on this list. You know, even the antique book, wood facial tissue that. Dispenser. So, you know, when you have a box of Kleenex, it's kind of, if you have your house really neat and tidy, okay. And I like to have, you know, a tidy house as much as I possibly can. I hate when you have like a Kleenex box just sitting there. So I love this idea that you have three sort of stacked antique books. Well, it's really just the shell of the books. You put the Kleenex inside it, and for $27.99, all of a sudden you've created this tissue dispenser that is much more aesthetically pleasing.
And it makes you look smart at the same time. And when it runs out, it doesn't look like an empty tissue box. And you're not going to get mad at somebody because they left it lying around, because you'll think, oh, that's just books. Genius. So the dad doesn't get in trouble for not switching out the tissue box. And the mom's happy because it still looks neat. Genius. I liked the black walnut desktop Edison lamp. I thought was pretty neat. I also like space. So I just want a Space Explorer patch that I could stick on my bag. There is a ton of really awesome stuff. If you're a Star Wars geek, there's some really cool Star Wars socks. You could buy yourself an R2-D2 suitcase. It looks like an R2-D2. Like, there is tons and tons of great. I think, Amber, you found one of the best lists out there to date that we've seen.
Yeah, it's called, again, dodobird.com. That's B-U-R-D.com for Father's Day geeky gifts. I want to talk forever about this, but we do have to go. So let us know what you think of some of these gifts. You can find us online at Amber Mack and at mbancroft80. Please use the hashtag The Feed. And Aaron, if people want to exchange geeky things with you, especially in the science area, where should they go?
I'm on Twitter at my name, Aaron Papernick, Aaron with one A.
And of course, use the hashtag The Feed. This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. and Paperboy on SiriusXM Canada Talks, channel 167.